Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
Hey, everybody, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Today on The Breakdown, with the U.S. Supreme Court appearing ready to further restrict access to abortions and possibly even overturn Roe v. Wade altogether, we're going to sit down with Jodi Hicks. She's president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of California. We'll talk to her about what comes next.
Yeah, abortion is, of course, legal in California, and nothing the Supreme Court does will change that. But a group of women's health organizations is preparing recommendations on what the state can or should do to help women from other states where abortion is unavailable. We may want to come here to get an abortion. We'll talk with Jodi Hicks about that, as well as the political ramifications of all this and much more. But first, we want to bring in our own Katie Orr, who has been reporting on this all week, the history of abortion rights and access in California. Hey, Katie.
Hi, guys.
So I want to begin just by, you focused in one of your stories about access for especially low-income women and people in rural, women in rural parts of California. Tell us, you know, how hard was it to report that story in terms of finding folks to talk with you in some of those places?
You know, it was a challenge. Of course, in our line of work, we're always looking for people, you know, to represent the story. We want to hear from someone who's gone through the experience. And as we all know, abortion is a sensitive topic, even in a place like California, where it's widely accepted. So it was a challenge finding someone who had gone through an abortion. And in the end, I was able to, but it was actually a coincidence. One of the women I was speaking to at the clinic I visited had had an abortion and was willing to talk about it and was happy to talk about it. And I think that's one of the reasons she was, is because she wants to try and erase the stigma around an abortion. It's a medical procedure. She had to have one, and she wants people to accept it more. But it was a challenge. Even just being able to visit a clinic was a challenge. And I think that reflects the fraught nature that surrounds abortion, again, even here in California.
Yeah, I mean, and Katie, you went to some of these rural areas where, you know, I mean, California is presented as a very blue state, but we know that there's a lot of disparities and differences between regions. What was your sense about the sort of politics and culture of this in some of these places that might have, you know, more voters, for example, opposed to abortion rights?
Well, in a lot of my reporting between rural California and, you know, the coastal cities, you just can't stress enough how different it is. It's almost as if it is a different state. I mean, of course, it's not. We're all governed by the same laws and all of that. But just the attitudes, the ways of life are different. I thought one of the things that really highlighted that was when I was at the clinic I visited in Chico. The executive director of the organization told me they have not had a provider, a local provider, in their entire history, and they've been around since the 70s. And that's because it's too hard for providers to provide those abortions and live in their communities because it's such a frowned upon thing in that part of the state.
Well, and how much of that is, I mean, obviously that's sort of political and personal points of view, but, you know, healthcare access in a lot of those counties in general is also, you know, not the best because there aren't a lot of community clinics and so on. So when you're reporting on the difficulty of finding a provider in places like that, how much of it is just lack of resources?
I mean, that is also a good point. A lot of people in these regions have to drive for hundreds of miles to get to the clinic that they need for any kind of health care. If you are in a place like Chico or Redding or Grass Valley, where this particular clinic has their branches, and for instance, you might need your abortion is more complicated than another might be. You might have to travel to Sacramento to receive care. And that takes time. It takes money. It takes a good, you know, form of transportation. A lot of people, the majority of people who receive abortions have children already. So they have to find someone to watch their kids. So definitely the rural nature of the situation is a factor as well, in addition to just the social stigma.
Katie, we'd love for you to give us just a very quick history lesson as we prepare to talk to Jody Hicks about abortion rights in California. I mean, this is something that partly came out of a group of physicians in San Francisco prior to the 1967 law that former Governor Ronald Reagan signed, sort of bringing, well, you explain it.
Right. Yeah. There was, and I should mention that I was informed by this by Dr. Carol Joffe of UCSF, who is a historian of sorts in this area. And she was mentioning that in San Francisco, there was a group of doctors called the San Francisco Nine. And at that time, before Reagan signed the law that expanded abortion access in California, you could only give abortions if the woman's life was in danger. And then German measles, rubella, appeared on the scene, and doctors began noticing that women who were infected with this disease while they were pregnant ended up having babies with severe birth defects. And so these doctors began performing abortions on these women because they, you know, they knew the results, how the babies would be born. And they thought that this would be, it could be harmful to the women as well. And when a member of the California Medical Board found out, he threatened to take their licenses, but they actually went, for the time, I guess, viral, and it really got a lot of support behind them and ended up, you know, it galvanized the nation in saying, like, we need more rules around this because it is not clear what is going on and when we are allowed to perform abortions. And, you know, women were getting them regardless, even if the doctors weren't giving them.
Yeah. So. Well, and later when Reagan ran for president, he said he regretted signing that law, but it really did have a pretty big impact on, probably was maybe copied in other states, I would guess.
Right. It really did. It let women get abortions for more than just, you know, if their life was threatened. An interesting side effect of that law, though, was that they put in a mental health exception, but you had to basically be proven to be suicidal. So women who had the means would end up paying doctors to testify that they were suicidal so that they could get their abortions. And I, you know, that is particularly interesting because, again, it demonstrates how women with means can, you know, spend the money they need to get the care they need, whereas women who don't have the money can't and are stuck still, you know, taking matters into their own hands.
Sort of feels like deja vu all over again.
Back to the future.
All right, Katie, before we let you go, there is a group called the Future of Abortion Council here in California. Tell us what they are and how this case is sort of informing their work, what you expect to see from them.
Yeah, this is a council that was convened by Governor Gavin Newsom, and it's made up of different advocacy organizations who support abortion. And it's really looking at what are some of the pain points California has when it comes to ensuring access to abortion for people in the state as well as out of the state. For instance, those challenges I mentioned around rural abortion are something they're looking at. Also, providers. California lets a wider variety of providers perform perform abortions. However, not all of those providers have access to the training they need to be able to do that. So that's, you know, for instance, something that they're considering. They'll look at those issues and they expect to present a list of recommendations on how the state should proceed later this month.
All right. That is KQED's Katie Orr, of course. And you can check out, by the way, all of her reporting on this issue at KQED.org. Katie Orr, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a short break right now. And when we return, we'll be joined by Jody Hicks. She's president and CEO of Planned Parenthood in California. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Do you love learning about the San Francisco Bay Area? Its history, its people, its unique blend of cultures? Then you should check out the Bay Curious book. I'm Katrina Schwartz, editor and producer on the Bay Curious podcast, and I'm here to let you know that for the month of May, we've worked out a sweet deal for KQED podcast listeners. Right now, you can get the Bay Curious ebook for $1.99. That's right, $1.99. Just search for Bay Curious wherever you get your ebooks or find a link in our show notes. This offer does expire at the end of the month, though, so you'll want to act on it fast. Happy reading!
Hi there, I'm Randa Abdel-Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. And our guest today is Jody Hicks. For years, she's been an influential advocate for women and health access in Sacramento. She's currently the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of California, where, as you can imagine, she is very much at the center of the legal and political debate over the U.S. Supreme Court, potentially striking down Roe v. Wade and the right to an abortion. Jody Hicks, welcome to Political Breakdown.
Hi, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, let's begin with these oral arguments that we heard this week. You know, what struck you? It did seem that there are five votes to either strike down Roe v. Wade altogether or at least weaken it even further. What struck you?
So I think, you know, as much as I shouldn't have been shocked, I think I was shocked like everyone at sort of the tenor of the conversation. And despite the fact that this is the law of the land, it has been for 50 years, despite the fact that all of the arguments that they brought forth, they did 30 years ago with Casey, it was very clear that we know that the only reason they took that case and the only reason that the states designed those laws that way is because the makeup of the court is new. And it seemed very clear that they are poised to do away with precedent anyway and take away a right that is really fundamental for people on their healthcare decisions, the very core decisions on the makeup of their future, despite 50 years of data on the economic impact of what happens when there's barriers to any type of healthcare, but certainly something as essential as abortion. It seems like, you know, they understood their assignment.
Well, let me ask you, though, on that, Jody, like, I think to your point, even folks who might not be as sort of personally involved in the stake of this, but constitutional scholars expected perhaps that this would be. I mean, we don't know what this decision is yet, but based on the oral arguments, there's sort of two paths, right? If a majority does want to either do, you know, gut Roe entirely or sort of slowly hollow it out over the course of several cases. I mean, does that matter to you and the women that you're working on behalf of? Like, is that a distinction without a difference? Or does it matter politically, maybe?
I mean, I think it matters politically on if they try and if there's an argument that people are trying to make that they didn't ban abortion, they're just restricting in some way that is the same. It's, you know, for people trying to get services, I would say for somebody who's trying to get a healthcare service and they find themselves in a place where they can't get that service within the borders of the state that they call home, I don't see how they care in right. what way that law is crafted. And you know, at the core of what we do, it's trying to ensure that patients get those services.
You know, the reality, of course, as you know, is that in a lot of these states, it's nearly impossible to get an abortion now for the lack of providers, among other things. So if, let's just say, they do go all the way and strike down Roe v. Wade, what happens in the roughly, you know, 25 or so states that could, you know, with Republican governors and legislatures, you know, really just go all the way and ban abortion? What happens?
I mean, I think we're going to see that impact in a way that I don't know. And I don't want to say we're not prepared for it, because as you talked about, we in California, we put together a council for that very reason, to prepare for the impact of what we see. But, you know, we're talking about half the country. We're talking about 36 million women of reproductive age that will find themselves not able to get a service within their state. And the part that strikes me after listening to everything yesterday is, you know, we're asked a lot. We've been working these last 3 months with the council on how we properly prepare for this influx of patients as we expect to see it. What I think I'm most afraid is if we don't see that influx of patients, because really the impact is the solution right now, which is the states that can become access points should be seeing an influx of patients. And then if they aren't, it is what we, you know, which is our greatest fear, is that people without means, people that are most vulnerable, just can't access travel and childcare and all of the practical support they would need to try and get a service that's time sensitive, that is essential. And, you know, we know it will change the trajectory of their life and their future. And so I think that's what scares me the most, is if we don't see that influx of patients.
You know, two of the Trump appointees on the court, Amy Coney Barrett and Justice Brett Kavanaugh, talked had different sort of approaches. And one of the things Kavanaugh said was that the court should be neutral. It strikes me, and I'm not a constitutional scholar or lawyer, but that it's a little late for that, right? I mean, the court's already waded into this. What do you read that as? And is there a situation, is that just a politic way of saying we should end Roe but act as if we're not doing that? Or I'm a little confused about what that could look like in practice.
I think they're trying to make a case that this is a, you know, it's a political issue. It really should be left to the people, but it's obviously moving away from the core of what a fundamental right is, which you have the right to liberty, the right to a decision that affects your health outcomes and the outcomes of your future. And that isn't left to a state or legislature, and it's certainly not something that the court should be neutral about. And then, you know, the arguments for and against are not really different than they were 50 years ago. There are people that believe a certain way and believe another way. And, you know, for us and all of our rights, I don't think we ever believe that they should be left up to the whim of extreme politicians.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. And our guest today is Jody Hicks. She's the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood in California. And we're talking with her, of course, about the U.S. Supreme Court now considering a couple cases, actually, that could well restrict or even eliminate abortion access in some states across the nation. You know, a minute ago, Jody, you said if, you know, Roe, as expected, is either struck down or gutted further, you said that it would be troubling if there weren't an increase in women coming to states like California. Do you have any concerns about anything but the politics or anything else of the, you know, of California becoming essentially a hub for abortions?
Well, I don't have concerns politically. I have concerns. It's what's keeping all of us up at night right now is to know a pathway that we can treat patients in California, wherever they call home. And I think, it troubles me. I was talking with my colleague in Texas, and they hear the stories every day, and you're talking about young people who have never traveled outside of Texas before, and they find themselves needing to make a very personal healthcare decision, navigate a public health care system that's hostile to them in trying to find the service, and then navigate all of the travel and everything around that. And so, the whole thing is troubling. In the states that want to ban abortion, by the way, they also are generally the worst at what other investments they make in terms of healthcare and women's health in particular. We just had a debate about whether or not we'll do, family leave and invest and pay for things like that and childcare. So, I mean, we're talking about the impact that if you're forced and the state takes control over the decisions that you make, if you're a pregnant person and you're forced to give birth, it's not as if there's wraparound services that, we're willing to invest in for those either. So, I mean, I think the impact will be immediate, and I think we'll see health outcomes, we'll see an economic impact. But I also think that we'll see a change in and a reaction in people, having sort of a spotlight on the access issue that's been in place for a while. I know you talked about abortion stigma. I like to think that is changing as well. People will be more abortion positive, and we won't think of it as this sort of stigma that's also a healthcare stigma, really. We have it as a side thing that we don't guarantee coverage for, and insurance may or may not cover it, and we don't treat it like a pregnancy service as anything else. So my hope is that while this is going to be dark, a dark time for people, that there'll also be a spotlight and people are going to make changes.
I wonder how you think about talking about this issue, Jody, to people who may, not be completely anti-abortion, but do have qualms with it, right? This is a tough issue. Nobody's excited about abortions. And you, before, heading mm-hmm. Planned Parenthood, were a lobbyist. You worked on reproductive rights issues. Like, how do you have those conversations and approach this with people who are deeply uncomfortable with the idea of abortion?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I've perfected it, because I'm a product of my generation too. And so I think I went through the 90s where we used words like choice and right to choose, and we didn't talk about abortion in the same way that we know we should be and we are doing now. I will tell you, and I say this, my 12-year-old will talk about abortion in a positive manner and very matter of fact. And the first time they did that, it was a little jarring for me, because it wasn't something that I had honestly had a conversation with them about. It was just sort of with amongst friends, the importance of abortion. And so I do think that when you have the conversation, we know the vast majority of people do not want Roe to be overturned. They do not want abortion to become illegal or even so hard to get that someone is forced to give birth. And I think as we talk about it in those terms more, that this is something, if taken away, it changes really the trajectory for people and their futures and their lives. I do think it becomes different for mm-hmm. people. I think when it's theoretical, right, it's much more of that debate, but when it's at our doorstep, as it is right now, I think people understand that it is an essential part of healthcare.
When we talk about California, of course, as Marisa said a moment ago, we are a very liberal state, at least, when it comes to the legislature and voting statewide. But when you think ahead to 2022 and the likelihood of Roe v. Wade being struck down or gutted, what do you see as the what should be put on the agenda for the legislature as you think about that in terms of funding, in terms of legislation, and so on?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, it's investments, and that's sort of what we're delineating with these list of recommendations is where do we need to invest resources? How do we really reimagine this space? And it's been an interesting quick 3 months and really sort of trying to change how we normally, you know, we've been hiring and training abortion navigators at Planned Parenthood because that's really going to be essential.
What does that mean?
It means it's almost, if you think about it conceptually, on when you're trying to find a provider for your healthcare, normally you punch in, you know, you have a whatever your health insurance plan is or however you're looking for it, you punch in a zip code and it'll bring up all of the providers in your area. If you sort of flip that around and you're a patient in Texas, you're not going to know what zip code you want to go to. It's just an open, where do I go? Where is there an availability? What is the best place to go and how do I get there? And so what we found, especially just with the one state, is people would call and need to know, like, you know, where they should come in. If they come to LA as their availability, how do they get there? They don't know the airport. It's all of those things. And so now, you know, we're going to have to invest in a way that's sort of flipping that script a little bit in how we help patients navigate not just a regular health system, but a specific and protected service that they're going to need all of kinds of wraparound support. So, yeah. And in workforce issues, I mean, there's just a lot of investments that need to be made if we're putting value to the proclamation that the governor did, which is California's a reproductive freedom state.
I want to ask, I mean, you kind of alluded to the potential for this to, quite frankly, change the politics if Roe is overturned. And obviously here in California, again, it's a different than sort of nationally, but I wonder what you, when you look ahead, I mean, to the midterms and what's happening, like how you think this could really impact the political debate next year.
Yeah, I mean, that decision is going to come in the summer and the midterms will be a few months after. And so what we are seeing, and I think some of this played out even in the recall election, is what we are seeing is when you talk about and people have at their doorstep this real threat of a fundamental right being taken away, or, you know, in California, there wasn't necessarily a danger of losing a constitutional protection that we have in the state, but there's certainly ways, as we've seen in other states, that you can put up real barriers where people, you know, their rights don't matter because they can't get the care. And so I think you put that in front of them and people are willing to fight and act and do things to prevent that from happening or from spreading. And, you know, what we have found is if you talk about abortion, or if you don't talk about it, if we just ask the open-ended question, what's on your mind? Texas is on people's minds. Hmm. People are not happy with these decisions.
Yeah. Well, you know, all of us bring to our lives and our work our backgrounds, where we came from and so on. You grew up, I think, in sort of rural Colusa County, graduated from high school there. Yeah, about an hour or so north of Sacramento, home now to Jerry Brown. You know, how do you think that shaped the way you think about all this?
I mean, I definitely, as I said, product of my generation, certainly a product of where I grew up, where, you know, I think Jerry Brown and I might be the only Democrats that came out of Colusa County, but even still.
Well, he came out of San Francisco.
Yeah, that's true.
So you might be the only one.
He ended up there.
Yeah, he went to Colusa. Yeah, which is even more weird. but I mean, I didn't grow up, even though I was probably thought of as more liberal than the rest of my folks, I didn't grow up talking about abortion. I certainly grew up during the times when there was rules being in place and all of the things of the 90s, but was still sort of that soft speak about it, and it has affected how I talked about it for a long time versus how I will talk about it now.
Yeah.
And it's been an interesting even journey for me to watch again with my kids and how they, you know, their natural evolution, if you don't put those stigmas in place for them, you know, how much they are much more positive, much more logical, you know, talk about healthcare in a way that's different.
But it
affects even when I go back to Calusa.
Yeah,
to be honest.
I'm sure it does. We have to leave it there. Jody Hicks, president of Planned Parenthood in California. Thank you so much on a very busy week for joining
us. Thank you.
And that's it for this edition of Political Breakdown, a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our producer is Guy Marzorati. Our engineer is Katie McMurrin. I'm Marisa Lagos. You can find me on Twitter at @mlagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mind Shift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.